Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's Week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Well, you can tell the business end of the season has arrived when you spend all of your working days getting nervous about the big fixtures. On Friday, it was, what if Manchester City mess it up against 19th place Leicester? On Wednesday, that became, how will Manchester City manage to throw away a 3-goal lead against Bayern Munich? Well, both of those games were navigated successfully, even if not comfortably at times. So attention now turns to the upcoming week. How embarrassing would an FA Cup elimination at the hands of Sheffield United be? And how will the players cope with the pressure of the top of the table clash with Arsenal after that? We'll preview both of those games on today's Blue Moon podcast and try and calm some of those nerves. Also on today's show, we'll be remembering the late Marc Vivien Foe. Friday marks 20 years to the day since he scored what turned out to be City's final goal at Main Road. So we'll look back on that game and the midfielder's influence in Kevin Keegan's side a bit later on too. Time to get going though. I'm David Mooney, and for this week's show, I'm joined by two City fans. We've got Macca.
Hi, David.
And Helen Powell.
Hello.
So, Helen, good to have you back for this season. It's been a while. Champions League, it's going pretty well, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'll like hesitantly say yes, it is. I think first of all, this team, it's been said sort of like, you know, last week and previous weeks on the podcast, but it's almost like the squad we're seeing now in the last couple of months is what we've been waiting for a few years. It's been building to this point, and we're at a point now where you can see a bit more confidence, a bit more sort of self-assuredness in the way we're playing. It's going well.
Yeah. I mean, Macca, it feels like there is a difference at the moment, and I don't want to just kind of look at the Bayern game and only the Bayern game and go, well, that's it. That's how City play in the Champions League now. But it does feel like there's not as many chaotic ties and that City are in control a lot more than they used to be, doesn't it?
It really does. And even though, like you say, you don't want to just focus on the Bayern game, I think that was just absolutely just... I didn't actually... I know we were under pressure quite a bit, but I didn't feel too panicked at any point.
A 3-0 lead does that for you, though, sometimes.
It does. It does, but everyone I spoke to, every City fan that I spoke to kind of in the morning or whatever, who was like, well, what if they get an early goal, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, what we've got is we've got the best defensive midfielder, central midfielder, defensive midfielder in the world by probably a wide margin. And we've got four lads at the back who played at centre-half in the World Cup. So there's no real weak link to target there, and it just feels a lot more, like you say, look, a lot more mature, a lot more controlled.
So, I mean, in terms of obviously with Haaland now, let's group it in with the game at weekend as well. He's now won the Golden Boot in every single 38 game Premier League season after 28 appearances. He's won the Golden Boot in 28 out of 30 Premier League seasons. He's got 6 home hat tricks, 3 home braces, and 7 home single goals, and only 5 games at home where he's not scored. So he's had 6 games at homes where he scored a hat-trick, 5 of them where he's not scored. That's mental anyway. 48 goals now for the season so far, 12 of them needed to match Dixie Dean's record. Can he do it?
Easily. He can easily do it. I mean, and again, going back to the fact that Dixie Dean's record was pre-offside law, it is absolutely bonkers. But it's funny because the last time I was on here, it was before the World Cup.
Yeah.
And we were kind of flying, and he was flying. And then after the World Cup, there was this ridiculous kind of criticism of him. Not within City, but and City fans, but outside, where they were saying, well, he's been a... I think I remember Paul Parker. I don't know where what it was on or where he's written it, actually saying he was appalling. And it's like, what are you watching? And it's like, but the thing is, it's like you've got, we've just kind of, he's just got closer and closer together in terms of how good he is and what he does and how good the team is and what they do. And it's kind of now so close that it's like he understands it, we understand him, and it's just like we are, again, just flying now. I mean, yeah. it's not the end product by any stretch, but again, going back to Guardiola, I mean, how good Haaland is. I know he's a young lad, but Guardiola just improves everybody.
Yeah. I was going to say that.
There isn't a player he can't improve. And if he thinks he can't improve him any further, he gets rid of him.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say this, Haaland, because in terms of everyone's been talking about how much City are adapting to Haaland, but you could see recently as well, Haaland's adapted to City, hasn't he?
Mm. Oh, 100%. This is the first season. It's you can see the massive improvement from the start to where we are now, in terms of the players being aware of him, in terms of knowing where to get the ball and knowing how to get the ball to him, but him responding well to the players around him, him getting more involved in more open game play and stuff like that. He's making himself available. He's doing more. He's, you know, crossing. He's so much more than we hoped he would be, and then you look like those stats you've gone through are absolutely unreal. What a guy! And you know, this week we found out he does a pretty good Yorkshire impression.
That John Stones impression.
I honestly can't stop watching
Move.
It. I'm still. It's like he's not just that. It's like his little eyebrow.
Move.
He sounds more like John Stones than John Stones does. I don't understand how that's happened, but yeah.
No, but I mean, taking that as part of it, he just seems to fit in with the team really well, and it's so nice to see. From like, you know, I'm an overly sentimental person, and seeing, you know, like, yeah, Alfie's son coming, he's like this unreal player, and it all feels really, really good.
All's well with the world at the moment, isn't it?
It's a nice place to be in, and you know, and when he puts four past Leeds in a few weeks, then it'll be even better.
The other thing, Macca, is that through ball from De Bruyne against Leicester. That is the epitome of what they weren't doing in the kind of 6-8 weeks post World Cup, isn't it? They can see where he's running now, and they play it. And I mean, against Bayern, in fairness, they didn't play it sometimes. But I wonder how much of that was just trying to keep the game kind of not make it a basketball game, essentially, not kind of you attack, we attack, and lose it that way. But you can see in the last few weeks, especially De Bruyne and Gundogan, they're really finding those passes through to him.
Yeah, totally. And I think that was our problem for a bit. And I was just like screaming a lot of times at games, just use him more. But again, that Brett for his goal last night, Bayern, for the Bayern game. And we got on this break and it was like 3 against 3 or whatever. And it was just like, gave him the ball. I know he slipped the defender, but they just thought, he's on it. And that's it. And the more we give him the ball, the more he then seems to be willing to kind of work and also give other people the ball. So it's a real good relationship at the moment. And obviously he's just quality, and he's, and like I say, it just seems like a really good man. He just seems like a real, which is mad. For, I mean, if I was at his level, earning his money when I was his age, oh my goodness. There's no way he won't be able to find me on a Saturday morning. Never know, play football. But it's just like, it just seems...
Macca, we can't find you on a Saturday morning now.
Especially in a crowd.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Sorry.
But yeah, it just seems like a really, really good lad. And like I say, he's just a perfect fit. And obviously he's within these a group of people who just, and again, it's just a nice mix. And I think we're very lucky to have him, and we're very lucky to have them, as in the rest of the lads as well.
I don't know about you guys, but the novelty of Erling Haaland scoring again and again and again has definitely not worn off yet.
It's actually becoming more of a novelty the more he does it, I find. I'm there gets a point now where he gets played through and I'm already giggling and he's not even shot.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was out on Saturday for the game, And we've done a bit of work at the cricket club. And well, the United lads have said, he's not very good on one-on-ones, though, is he? I was like, what? What are you talking about? And then obviously straight away, he goes one-on-one. But there you go. Yeah. But no, it's fine. But what is it? Is he 21? I mean,
22, I think now.
22. Yeah.
Getting on now.
Getting on. But I mean, it used to be the thing, didn't it? You peak at 27. Not nowadays. Not with the condition and everything. You're peaking at probably 30, and he's got a lot of records to break. Let's put it that way.
It's quite scary.
Yeah.
No, it's scary. It is scary. Yeah. He's phenomenal.
He's
absolutely
ridiculous.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, it says a lot as well, I think, Helen. I mean, Macca mentioned the slip in the build up to the goal. He actually does something really, really intelligent in front of that slip, where he goes, "Oh, you've slipped over, so I'm just going to chip it over you before I take the shot on." All right, yeah. Like anybody else would have gone, "Great, he slipped over, I can get past him here." And he's like, "No, I got this, lads. Watch this." So he does that, and the confidence to do that after blazing a penalty over the bar in the first half. I mean, like there's a little bit of pressure on that kick, and there was the whole delay before it. But he's just brushed it off and kind of got on with it.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he's not. Obviously he is, but he just feels like he's not human to some level. Do you know what I mean? He kept like, because yeah, he missed the kick, and there was the build up and the atmosphere and all that time. But I just think he's not like some of our team, much to love him, and massive confidence players. He's not like that. I think he's very like direct. Okay, that didn't work. Go again immediately, and it happens. You know, it's not. You don't watch it thinking, oh, he doesn't believe he's going to score this. I didn't think that when I watched the penalty. And I was like, oh, that's a shame. But, you know, it happens. Carry on. And that's exactly what he seemed to do. And it's
get him
fantastic.
A chance. Yeah, get him another chance. He'll bear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Macca, obviously, the Leicester game, the way it finished, it was a bit harum-scarum at times. And I think Guardiola, after the game, admitted he might have made the changes a bit early for everybody's liking. But ultimately, they've come away from that with the 3 points. They got out of there with a job well done. We'll come on to Edison a bit later on in the show as well. But it's kind of like, I'm wondering how much of that sacrifice in the end of the Leicester game made the Bayern performance possible.
Totally. It could have backfired that what he did at Leicester, but against Leicester. But I wouldn't criticise him for that, because you're not bringing duck eggs on, you're bringing them good footballers. But they could have ended up with a point there. We could have dropped points. But like I say, I don't criticise Guardiola for what he did. And I think totally, I mean, we looked really, really at it against Bayern. We looked as fresh as we could do. The work rate was fantastic. And yeah, no, I think all in all, those two games, just absolutely, you can't fault what he did. You can't fault what Guardiola did. No, it was completely the right decision.
I mentioned Edison, Helen. People have said they wanted to see more from him in the making saves department. And I mean, you can't argue with what he's been doing in the last fortnight or so, can you?
No, he's been an absolute wall in the last couple of weeks. And it's been a lot good. Well, it's been fantastic to see. I mean, I am one of those people that I do think I've criticised him quite harshly this season. I think when you've got to a point when you've got the team we've got, you're sort of like, okay, but then what do we need to, you know, what needs to step up next? And, you know, Edison's quite frequently in that conversation, but I just think he's shown some of his best moments in more recent games. And like say, Leicester and some of the stops last night just kept us where we needed to be.
Yeah. How much of the last of the upturn in form do you think, Macca, of the last kind of 6-8 weeks or so is down to Edison and his? It looks like he's just playing with more confidence more than anything else.
Well, it's like to kind of build on what Helen was saying. I was trying to make more saves, and now it's again a bit of a cliche with him, and it's a bit corny, but he wasn't making enough saves, and he now is. I mean, with his feet, he's just absolutely perfect. There's no better footballer, no better goalkeeper in the world who's better with his feet than he is. But it was one of those where you just come away from the game a lot of the time, and you just go, "What did he do there?" and then you've drawn or you might have lost, and it's like, did he make any saves? What did he do? But now he's doing it, and it's quality. So I wouldn't say it's anything to do with him in terms of the upturn of the performances, because he's, in terms of creativity, he's still doing what he used to do with his feet, and he's been brilliant at that. It's just making saves. But yeah, again, that sounds like Roy Keane.
I tell you what though, Helen, there is one department that he probably needs to get a bit more subtle in, and that's time wasting.
Oh goodness, what was that? What, I couldn't work out what happened last night when the glove was off and there was something that I was like, oh
no. Right, here we go,
strap in everyone.
Right, so in terms of his time wasting, for me, the best thing to do for a goalkeeper is get that yellow in as early as possible. Because are you going to be that referee who sends someone off for two, a goalkeeper off for two yellow?
Yeah, but
are you going to risk that?
Well, Edison is prone to a moment of madness that would then be off. Like, and
well, of course, he's in keepers.
I'd be like, do it. Yeah. That smiley face on your neck has seen things. I'm telling you that much, and I just like wouldn't mess with him.
But has any goalkeeper in the top flight, if at any division, I'm really going for it here.
Yeah.
been sent off.
In the history of the world.
Yeah. Been sent off for two yellows for time wasting. I know,
right, Kevin Keegan.
I know it's a risk. But my thing is, maybe he's a genius about doing this. You just think, well, I'll just get it in as early as possible. And then I can do whatever I want. I can make a brew.
No,
I can do whatever I want. And you're not going to get your second yellow then.
Let me put it this way.
Box. He does something crazy, and that's it.
Different. For two yellows for actually time waste. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, let me put it this way, Micah. If there is any club in the English league that can have a goalkeeper sent off for two yellows for time wasting, would it not be City?
On the last game of the season,
while a goal down, yeah.
To go. Yeah, maybe, but I don't know. I don't know how you get better at time wasting.
I don't know. I don't know if you just need to be a bit more subtle with it. I don't know.
What's your tips, Moon?
Because I play in places where I have to go and get the ball. I'm just knackered all the time. I go and get it, and I'm like, I can't make it back to the goal with a run. I'm gonna have to walk. Listen, I am not fit. So that's how I do it. It's like it's not actually time wasting. It just wastes time doing what I'm doing as fast as I can.
I mean, everyone does it, and you know, it's fine. Go for it. You know, I know. Like the minute the opposition goalkeeper does it, everyone's on their back, and as it should be. But like, you know, part of me is like, do we need to do it? Like, everyone looks for any stick they can to beat City with, and is that just something we can be like, not going to? But at the same time, everyone else does it, so just do it. Just go for it.
Yeah.
But I don't know, I'm quite torn on it.
Yeah. I think it's just inherent in some, especially South Americans, they're going to just do something to try and wind people up. So yeah, I'm leaving to it. This is going to harm me, isn't it?
Yeah.
When he gets sent off against Arsenal 5 minutes into the second half,
time waste.
You've ruined my birthday.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, I forgot about that.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Right. Well, we're going to head to the past for a bit now, because Friday's 20 years to the day that City scored their final goal at their old stadium. Mark Vivian Foe's strike in the 80th minute against Sunderland at Main Road would be the last by a City player on that ground. I've been chatting to Adam Carter from statcity.co.uk, Niall Taylor, who runs the Instagram account Retro City Goals, and first Dom Farrell from Sporting News about the late Cameroon midfielder.
I reckon I first became aware of the significance of it about 20 minutes into that final game at Main Road against Southampton, thinking they just... they're not going to score all day today, are they? So this is the one. And I mean, obviously there's huge poignancy with what happens not long after that goal. But I think, I mean, with, you know, in present company and the generation we're all from, Main Road was a very special place. I think it can get sugarcoated. There were some really, really bad atmospheres there and terrible times. But... that was, you know, certainly in my City supporting life, that season of finishing ninth in the Premier League, even though the season petered out a bit, that was probably a great high point of my sort of time watching City at Main Road. And yeah, he was part of that Keegan era. You know, he maybe doesn't come to mind straight away for you of like the entertainers under Keegan who played in midfield, but valuable goals that year. And yeah, it's good kit as well.
Yeah.
That Lecoq one. So yeah, it's a... and this is blindingly obvious, there can only ever be one last goal at Main Road, and there it is.
Adam, in many ways, it's quite nice that it with the news of what would happen with Foe over the summer, it's quite nice that he had that honour, wasn't it? He was never going to stay around at City. City were never going to have the money to be able to keep him for the following season. But it was a great season he'd had at City.
Yeah, I loved the finality of it in a way, because... weirdly, I was on a dodgy season ticket that last season, which meant that I was never guaranteed to get in on the games. So when it came to like the West Ham game and that Sunderland game and the Southampton game, I was always, every time I departed Main Road, I always imagined it was going to be my last time. So because I knew I wasn't guaranteed a ticket. So I almost ended every game like staring around the place, trying to be one of the last to leave in a weird kind of morbid fascination way.
Like the end of a sitcom.
Yeah, exactly that, like the last one to turn the lights out.
Yeah.
So I probably, and to make it all about me, of course, I probably put more on that last goal because I was, from a selfish point of view, I was thinking that could be the last goal I see at Main Road, not thinking that I was going to be able to make the Southampton game or the West Ham game subsequently. So I do pair my memories of Main Road too. I pin a lot of them on Foe and that whole season, like Dom's alluded to with the kit, the Keegan, you know, that era. And so I've got a bit more sentimentality, not than anyone else, but just more special for me in that I do associate that with the finality. And it's just like Dom says, we know what came after, and it's just nice that he's carrying that honour as the last goal scorer at Main Road.
Adam, can I jump in with a top trumps on last man to turn the lights out? After the Southampton game, we got left the ground, walking back down Claremont Road, I realised I'd left my glasses case under my seat. Now, clearly my subconscious has done a thing there.
Yes.
So I legged it back in, the gate still open and everything. And yeah, I went and got my glasses case from under my seat in the family stand. And yeah, that's Main Road then. So yeah, obviously there will have been other people late in the ground, but it was like, that was kind of weird that I got to do that. I mean, it wasn't that weird because I used to lose my glasses case all the time. That was my little last final goodbye.
Yeah. Well, Niall's now going to tell us that he turned the lights out after the Southampton game. So,
They're overnight, man.
Yeah. Niall, this goal is, I mean, this has come from your collection. I'm going to play the audio from the goal. It's a report of from Fox News. Sadly, I can't find the commentary of the goal, but this was how they described it on Fox News afterwards.
This was the first meeting between these two at Main Road in the Premiership. And with 10 minutes to go, Ali Benabia was determined to finish it in style. Sunderland carved open as Foe jammed home his ninth of the season.
There we go. I mean, just from your memories of that game and Foe in particular, what did that mean to you, that goal?
It's weird. Like the lads have touched on that, we didn't really understand the significance of it at the time. I remember on the day being more delighted that Fowler had scored, because he'd been there for 4 months, and I think he'd only scored once, and he just didn't look impressive at all. But a couple of things on that commentary, it's just to point out, it's not the first time we met Sunderland at Main Road, because one of my favourite ever games was 2 years prior.
Yeah.
I don't know where he got that from. And oddly, he says Benabia was looking to end it in style. Do you know who put the ball in for the goal?
It's Jamel Belmadi, his Algerian mate.
which I didn't know. And I don't mind saying, I didn't realise that the West Ham game came after this. So it's something that I've just completely lost in my memory, that, the last game at Main Road, sorry, the last goal at Main Road from a City player was 2 or 3 games before the actual last game. So, it's strange to me, because I know it's the end of an era, obviously, for obvious reasons, and it's quite fitting that Fowler got the goal, but it felt like the end of a very specific era of a City team as well for me. We still had Horlock, Teato, Vikings, Gota, Weaver, to an extent, knocking around in that squad, and they all left that year. And that squad was sort of mixed in, and more so the next year, with players that I think Keegan sort of fancied for a year or two, and then he'd move them on, and that's what we became. Fowler, for me, is the exception, because he was excellent that season. And there were a couple of players that came in, sort I think just out of convenience for them, like Fowler and Schmeichel, but Fowler came in for a year, was, I know, fair enough, the first 3 months, I don't think he hit the ground running, but once he started to score, he was integral to that team that season.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, actually, because I want to play this. This is an interview that I found with Mark Vivian Fowler. He's speaking after City had beaten Aston Villa at Main Road. It was 3-1 on Boxing Day. He scored a brace that day. But they were his fourth and fifth goals for City. And it was only like a fortnight earlier he scored his first goal. So he's in a real kind of hot goal-scoring form at this point. And it's funny you say about starting slowly, because this is what he said about that game and those goals.
I'm very happy for us to get some points, that it will be better if we get more points than goals. So I'm happy to score now, because I've lost too many in the start of season. So now I'm enjoying playing now. I think I have to keep going.
And Dom, I don't know if this is heresy, but it must be, you know, through August, through September, through, you know, like October, November, I was genuinely sitting here thinking, who is this guy? Like, why have they got him? He's a holding midfielder that isn't holding. He's not an attacking midfielder that's scoring goals. What's the point of him? And then by the end of the season, he's a cult hero at City.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously everyone had the dream that the Benabia Berkovic midfield axis that had sort of ripped the championship to bits would just come and swashbuckle everyone to high heaven. Obviously, that became clear pretty quickly. That wasn't realistic. So it needed something a bit more robust in there. And obviously, Fowler was. I mean, he's kind of... So this is like 2003. He's very much of his time of a Premier League midfielder. I think you'll remember around that time is when Pep Guardiola did those columns for El País, where he was like bemoaning the death of the football he liked and saying football was all about sort of, you know, physicality and, you know, box to box guys. There's a lot of players from that Premier League era, particularly like, say, Fowler, someone coming in who, you know, played in France and played in Europe. Sort of, I thought clubs were looking for guys with technical ability, but who could also do the our league, capital O, capital L stuff that everyone likes. So he was that, but I think it did jar in the early weeks. It's like you're thinking, you know, he doesn't create like Berkovic and Benabia. Kevin Orlock's probably better on the ball, you know. But then, you know, goals change games and change perceptions of a player, don't they? And when you say he got on that little run around just for, you know, either side of Christmas, and then, yeah, he was never out of the side. He became integral.
Yeah, Adam, he was all, he was, you know what I mean when I say this, but he was all legs and arms, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was a bit more in favour of him earlier on in the season. I was convinced that we'd signed our version of Patrick Vieira. That's how I kind of held it. But yeah, he never looked fully in control, but he was this presence in the middle of the park that I don't think we'd had for a few years in terms of that stature and that style of play. But it was all, you know, legs and arms, but there was a composure to it as well. There was almost like, it sounds weird to have an elegance with that kind of, it was a perfect mashup of that. And what I love, and you've alluded to it a minute ago, like, it's not just, we're not just like eulogising over him because of what's happened since, and we're not like seeing him in a different light. He had genuinely carved that cult hero status for himself before his tragic passing at the end of the season. So I'm just pleased that we did have that kind of connection with him. The floral tributes after he went was, you know, you could see the outpouring of grief outside Main Road, and he had that connection with us to build that connection in one season as well. I just think it's amazing. But yeah, he certainly was a weird player to watch, even though there was an element of gracefulness to it, even though it was all legs and arms, as you say.
Yeah. Now, were you on board from the start, or was it a case of that goal? He scored a goal at Sunderland. He opened the scoring at Sunderland, where he must have got it to head height to control the ball to knock it around the keeper. And it was at that point I started to see it. And I admit, like, makes me a fair weather fan. You know, I've seen the good stuff, and I'm going, yeah, I get it now. How about you? For the entirety of that season, what was he like?
Yeah, at early stages, I wasn't sold on him as a player, but. My dad was insistent that he'd come good. And I remember watching that Sunderland game. I think it was a Monday night, and it was on Sky. And he did. He jumped about 7 foot in the air, nearly kicked the keeper's head and scored. And I remember my dad saying, you deserve that, and screaming at the TV, like, you deserve that. And he kicked on immediately from then. And it's strange with Foley, because I think he's a player that would probably be more appreciated in the game now than 2002.
Absolutely.
Like the lads have said, he wasn't really a defensive midfielder that sat there and swept the ball up in front of the back three or four. He did a lot more than that. And I think that was the intention of when he came in, that we'd have a player that could allow Bernabia or Berkovic, as it was more so that season, to go and play. But it didn't really work. And then it ended up with, I think, Teato started to play in midfield quite a bit as well. I think he might have even played Wright Phillips in the middle three or two or whatever he was doing before Barton came in at the end of the year. But Foley played. Looking at the stats, I think he played 35 out of 38 games, and he only got subbed off once because he was injured. So he's played 90 minutes in pretty much all the season, which just shows you how crucial he was. And yeah, I don't mind saying, yeah, at the start of the season, I wasn't sold on him, didn't think that he had much to offer. But once he did find his position and find his role in that team, he was massive. And it's funny, we're saying about him taking sort of 3 or 4 months to settle. We give players a year now under Pep.
Yeah, and we're better. Yeah,
and we're miles better. And you know, to credit Foley, he did it in 3 or 4 months. And as soon as we hit winter in England, he started to think, well, come on, I can start attacking, and I can offer this team something. And he finished our second top scorer. So, yeah, all credit to him.
Yeah, the absolute epitome of the opposite of a fair weather footballer. As soon as the weather gets cold, he comes good. That's unheard of, isn't it? I asked a few of the team that played with him that I've got contact details for kind of some memories. Unfortunately, when we've come to record this, most of them haven't been available before then. But Niklas Jensen did send me this. Unfortunately, I don't think he quite got what I was asking for. He seems to talk about the season as a whole more than Mark Vivian Foley. But he does. He does talk about what Foley was like and kind of his role in the team. So this is Niklas Jensen, the left back of that era, talking to us about Mark Vivian Foley.
Hello, all Blue Moon podcast listeners. This is Niklas Jensen, former player of Man City. 20 years ago, since I played in this tremendous club, it's 20 years ago that the last goal at Main Road was scored by a brilliant man, Mark Vivian Foley, who tragically lost his life shortly after, only a few months. I was so privileged to play with him. What a player he was, and what a human being also outside the pitch. So was very 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 nice time together with him. Very nice time together with the whole squad. Actually, back then I think we had. We had a good time in the last season in Main Road when I played in the Premier League there. So it's a different club now. It's very nice, obviously, with all the Premier League titles, and hopefully within a couple of months also a Champions League title. So cross fingers for that. Thank you for letting me be part of this brilliant club. Let's hope for all the best in the future for Man City.
So that's Niklas Jensen. We've also got a little story from the photographer Kevin Cummins. He was doing a photograph book for that season, documenting the final season at Main Road. And we've mentioned the Aston Villa game on Boxing Day. This is an incident that happened between Kevin Cummins and Mark Vivian Foe on that game.
When he scored his two goals against Villa, I was stood in the tunnel. I watched a shot of him coming off the pitch. And as he approached me, I just said, goal machine, Marco. And he took his shirt off and gave it to me. I was staying with some friends in Manchester. And I got a phone call about midnight from Les Chapman, the kit man. And he said, did Marco give you his shirt after the game? And I said, yeah. And he said, what an idiot. I told him not to give that shirt away because it's the only one he's got. He won't be able to play against Fulham. And I said, well, you must have another shirt, Les. And he said, no, he said, he always wears double XL, and that's the only one we've got till mid-January, till the Cox Sportif are back, you know, and they send us some more. He said, because Foey was always sending his shirts back to his family in Africa and stuff. He said, you're going to have to bring it down to London to the team's hotel. And eventually, it must have been about a 10-hour drive that day down to London for this, and we got to, the team was staying at Chelsea Harbour. We got there and I said to Les, I've got the shirt. And he came down, he looked at it and he said, haven't you fucking washed it? I'm going to have to go and wash this in. This is like the midnight, the night before the game. He said, I'm going to have to go and wash this now in the sink. The next day I was taking some pictures before the match when the team were warming up. And I said to Foey, I said, you're only playing because of me. And he said, yeah, no, he said, Les told me. And then when they finally got some shirts, I finally got the sweaty one back. He gave me that. He tried to fob me off with a new one, but I wanted that one.
It just, it kind of suggests, Dom, doesn't it, that Foe was, two things, a bit in a world of his own, but at the same time, like, just a really generous person.
It also suggests Kevin Cummins took a horse and cart down to London. How did it take 10 hours? I know the traffic's bad, son. 10 hours. The thing is, so I'd never, obviously Nicholas Jensen was a voice, not just himself, but I've never heard them stories before, but you always heard a lot of those things about Foley. And obviously when people die, particularly when they pass away so young, you do hear glowing tributes. But I think, and maybe this is sort of the media cynic in me, you can tend to spot pretty early on where it's people ticking box with just like, you know, I don't speak of their pleasantry, but he was clearly a very, very well loved man with like guys that played with him, people that had any sort of dealings with him. He came across as a big hearted individual. Well, an XXL hearted individual, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Always wears double XL. I mean, it's the other side of this, Adam, is that like these days you can rock up at City and they're handing out shirts because they're making them that
exactly
frequently. Yeah.
Shooting them out into the crowds. I think that's a perfect. A timeless story of where we were at that point as well. The fact that even a generous gift needs to be returned before the next game. You can borrow the shirt, but the players might need it back.
Yeah.
That's just typical City, that. And we're trying to do a good thing and we have to rein it back in again.
Yeah. Niall, for everything that you hear about Foe off the pitch, and you know we've talked about his influence on the pitch, it's one of those players where you think, you know, if only City could have been able to keep him. I mean, it's like I say, even if he hadn't passed away that summer, they'd never have got the money together to be able to sign him permanently. It's almost like a privilege to have had that season with him, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's evident how much we missed him on the pitch the following season because we just didn't replace him. I think we brought in four or five midfielders that were all in the early 30s by that point. Boswell, Reina, Sibierski, McManaman.
McManaman, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, other than McManaman, I don't really dislike any of those players, but I wouldn't call any of them a successful signing for City. And he was really missed on the pitch. I think off the pitch as well, it obviously is going to affect teammates and everyone involved with the club. But yeah, every story you hear about Foley from players and teammates, not even City players and you know, from other clubs and international, they always said that he was just always a happy, smiling, wonderful person. And I think it's quite evident, like we've said, that, you know, when these tragic things happen, it's clear how much of an impact it has and how good of a person they are. And he was definitely one of them.
Yeah. Niall, are all of his goals on your Instagram page? Have you got them all now?
I think I've got all of them except... I have. I've got all of them, but I need to upload one, his first one against the Villa on Boxing Day, and then yeah, the set will be complete, so maybe I'll time that well.
Yeah. Have you got a favourite of his?
Probably that one, because I think it's that goal that he scores at the front of the North Stand, and then he runs towards the corner, and I'm sat right at the back of the main stand in a temporary block that was put in there for that season, and it was just above the you remember the old police sort of hut or whatever it was, the security hut. They put a temporary block above that for that season, and he comes running over and starts pointing towards our block. I've no idea why, but that lasted lasted long in my memory, because I thought he was pointing at me, as you do.
He was clearly shouting, get this one on Instagram. That's what he was saying.
Time, get this one on Instagram for a very niche audience of people that remember City being pretty shit.
Adam, in terms of his overall play as well, he was much involved. We can't ignore the fact, though, that Sean Gota nicked the ball off Gary Neville for that that Derby goal. the entire reason he was able to was because Foué played one of the worst passes you'll see in the history of football.
He meant it. He knew exactly. He knew Neville wouldn't be able to cope with the Derby Day pressure. He thought, if I just lump this in behind, Gota will dispossess him and the rest will be history. But yeah, it was just a punt upfield that wasn't meant to do anything. But well, I'll take it and I'll redecorate it all day long.
Yeah, what a man. Dom, just to finish then, I mean, in terms of Foué as the player and the person, what's your overriding memory of him?
Probably a big part of it is that pass of, like, obviously everyone, we've all watched that goal back quite a lot for other reasons, but what's he even trying to do? like I say, he's part of a really good time of, like, the Royal and Keegan years, were someone of my age, were the first time City hadn't just been a desolate thing. And it also, I mean, this might be a morbid note to finish on, but let's go with it. Like, when he died, so when I was younger, I was absolutely baffled by people losing their heads about people dying who they didn't know. Like, when I was, for example, the one that stands out to me is Princess Diana's funeral and all that carry on.
Yeah.
I could not get my head around that as a 11-year-old lad, as I was then. So a few years later, when Foué dies, I watched the first half of that game, the Cameroon game, and then went out to my girlfriend's at the time. My dad phoned me up and he said, "Are you sitting down?" Which is never a great way to start a phone call. And he said, "Marvin Foué's dead." So what? And I remember it completely flooring me and feeling upset, like a friend had died, and I'm telling myself, well, this is silly, he's a footballer. But then you come to realise that, particularly at that age when you're young and you've not got any responsibilities, the thing I cared about more than anything in the world every week was City winning a game. And this is really simplistic, but the players who play for them, however you might shout good or bad things at them when they do good or bad things on the pitch, they are trying to achieve that same end that you want to happen more than anything else. And so I guess his legacy, I mean, God, I wish it had happened without him sort of tragically dying, but it sort of made me realise that bond, sort of understand that weird bond between football as a football club and the fans. So this is what, you sort of made sense of that, of the general weirdness of being a football fan. The fact his death, like, really upset me. It was like, God, this is how this is all linked, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's and I mean, ultimately, then it's kind of quite fitting that he did get the final goal at Main Road.
Yeah, absolutely. In many ways, you wish it wasn't fitting, but yeah, it's like I say, it's a nice thing, you know, that we get to talk about the guy and remember the guy who was special to an awful lot of people.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Dom Farrell, Adam Carter and Niall Taylor looking back over the late Mark Vivian Foe's City career. Time now to look ahead to this weekend's game with Sheffield United and the Premier League game with Arsenal coming up on the horizon. Let's speak to Johnny from the Sheffield United fan channel, The Shoreham View. Hi, Johnny.
Oh, yeah, you're all right there.
Yeah, not bad. How's this season going for you? I've had a quick look at the table before. 4 points off being sure of promotion, 8 points clear of third. You're coming back up, aren't you?
We are, but it's a strange one. We've not really got out of second gear all season, which is really bizarre to say, sitting in second place. So whilst it's a good league position, there's always that danger if we don't pick up results that we could throw it away, as daft as it sounds, even 4 points off. But being a Sheffield United fan, I'm sure you guys all know from your olden days, whatever there's a pessimistic bone to be had, we'll have it.
Yeah, I know the feeling. Macca, we remember those days. Well, I was going to say well, but I don't know if it is well or not. It's I remember them.
Let's put it that way, yeah.
In terms of this game, I mean, obviously the big elephant in the room, Johnny, is that McAtee and Doyle can't play. How big a miss is that for you guys?
Massive. We saw the other day, Macca came on. It was in a boot the day before, according to Ekinbottom. I'm not sure if I quite believe that or not. But we started Fleck, who's got no legs at the minute because he's coming back from a long-term injury. And we just looked so uncreative and just made hard work of what should have been a routine win. I don't want to disrespect Bristol City, but it should have been. We were better than them. We had better players. And as soon as McAtee came on, that were it. Grabbed a goal, creative spark, game over. And I think that's what we're going to miss against Man City. Not saying that a creative spark will help us do anything against you. What I'm saying is it'd be a lot more entertaining on the eye to at least have a few more goes at goal.
Yeah. Helen, from a City point of view, in a weird way, I kind of feel a bit disappointed that they can't play as well, because like it's a good opportunity for them more than anything else.
Yeah, it's a great way to see how they perform alongside, you know, our first team, whoever we go with on Saturday. It'd be really great to see what they're up to. I mean, I keep a bit of an eye on them. It's good to see the amount of play time they're getting, especially McAtee as well. So yeah, it's a bit of a shame, but also, you know, I'll take it.
Well, there is that as well, Macca, because the idea that off the back of a Bayern Munich game that was, you know, it took a lot out of the team in the midweek, you kind of wonder what team he's going to name, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he is gonna do, but is he gonna pick Haaland? I don't know. I don't know how many he's gonna rest. But just going back to McAtee, it's because I've really got an interest in because I know his dad. So this is how old I am now. So his dad's the same. He's the same age. He's from Little Ulton, so he's down the road from me. So his dad Johnny went to the same school as a lot of my mates did, who we played cricket with actually for Salford. And his dad was a brilliant rugby league player, hard as nails. So I've got a real interest in McAtee. I really, really hope he comes back and actually kind of is straight in the squad next season. And because I think in terms of, I know I'm going off track here, but like with Cole Palmer, I think he's had a missed year, hasn't he? A little bit in many ways. He probably should have gone on loan away as well. But anyway, back on track. I have absolutely no idea what team he's going to pick. Is he going to start with Rodri? Don't know. I genuinely don't know. It could be like one of those tombolas from Guardiola, isn't it? And just, it could be anything.
Especially with that Arsenal game, which we'll come on to soon. Yeah. But that on the horizon as well. I mean, Johnny, when you hear us talking about like, oh, we might not play Rodri or he might not play Haaland. I mean, I accept like it is proper spoilt rich kids sort of problem. like, what are you expecting from Sheffield United? What will Paul Heckingbottom do?
Well, first off, if you do play Greta up front, I'm really hoping you don't. I just don't want it. Don't want him anywhere near. And goalkeeper, just play him offside. Standard 80s Arsenal offside trap on halfway line or something. Just get him away from there. As far as what Ekinbottom's going to do, again, it's a strange one. We've seen positive pull where he comes out and he goes, right, you know what, just jump in the faces from get-go. We've also seen negative pull where he's like, right, if we can keep it 0-0, that'd be lovely. And I don't want that. We've got nothing to lose. Why would we go out there and try and keep it 0-0 when you, like you said, when you've got the spoils of war that you've got? You could play, you could pick off your under-18s team. And I'd imagine that their wages and value is probably up there with ours anyway. We know that because two of your young players are our key players. So yeah. We know no matter what you throw at us, we've got to be at our best. So I'm hoping Heckingbottom just throws all caution to the wind, really. Just as soon as they take a kick off, just run in a straight line, barge into them, and just do what you can.
And to be fair, the people like Brentford did when they won at our place, that's what Brentford did.
And that's what you got
to
do.
That's it. Like, you say nothing to lose. Just like, just go for it.
That first year under Chris Wilder in Premier League, nobody expected us to finish anywhere but bottom. Fair enough, we did that the season after. But, you know, that first season, we went out and thought, you know what, we're here. We're not just going to make up numbers. We'll just go at teams and see what happens. And I think that's how you win games. Like, it's like you said about Brentford. Every team that comes into the Premier League and has a good season, that's the attitude they take. Mm. You don't see many teams sitting back and surviving. And I think that's going to be the key in the cup game. We went out against Tottenham. We had forced changes. So we put in the kids who played with no fear. I'm adamant that I want younger players playing against Man City. I don't want no Woods and Flex. The legs are going. They play a certain style of way that's not going to change for anybody. And it's very conservative. I'd much prefer younger players to go out there. And at least they're not going to match you, but at least have a go.
Yeah, Helen, I'm already getting slightly nervous about this, and it sounds ridiculous because like you sit here and go, you don't want to underestimate the team that you're playing, because what happens is you end up with a cup upset on the cards. But at the same time, like City took Burnley apart, and they've been running away with the Championship this season. So it's like it really is in City's hands. It's just like, just don't mess it up on the big stage, lads. Come on.
Oh yeah, no, I don't like to get too confident. Say even now. You look at the last few years in the FA Cup semis, like we've gone out to traditionally big teams. I'm saying traditionally because of current league standings. We've always got it in us. And, you know, everyone will go on about like Wigan and Sheffield United. Sheffield United in 2008. Like, you know,
Oh yeah, have you got any balloons playing, Johnny?
I'm giving nothing away. Anytime that any of our players come near that goal, you said avalanche of balloons coming from that side.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Cheers, Helen.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten about that. I've got a story about that game, which isn't fit for this podcast, but I'll tell you.
They're the best kind of stories.
Yeah. I might need to know this now, Maka.
No, not yet. Yeah.
I think it's probably best off podcast.
Yeah, we might come to that a bit later on. But yeah, sorry, Helen. You talk about 2008, those sorts of thoughts. You don't want them, do you?
No, but they're always there. And I said, like, you know, we can, you know, we're having a fantastic, fantastic season, especially recent run of form. But yeah, I don't put anything past us, to be honest.
Johnny, I want to talk a little bit more about McAtee because obviously there's a big buzz around him at City, but he's been a bit distant from us. We've not really seen that much of him. You've been watching him most weeks. What's he been doing for Sheffield United that's been creating that buzz?
He's filled the hole left by Morgan Gibbs-White from last season. But whilst Morgan Gibbs-White was, we called him Flicks and Tricks, everything was a back heel, everything was this. And if it didn't come off, it could cost you big time. McAtee's very much a better footballer. He's creative at going forward. He knows how to beat a man. He'll shoot. He's very creative. I don't want to say he fits in that Phil Foden mold because he is different, but he's got it in him to produce bits of magic. But he doesn't over-rely on trying to stand out with cocky flicks and tricks and, you know, just knocking it forward to nobody. He's very concerned about getting into an attacking position and getting the ball in the back of the net. And where I think as we're looking at McAtee as a player, I think you need to look at players like Doyle behind him. Because he's the one who frees up McAtee to get into those spaces. Yeah, so if he were to come into a Man City team, he'd have midfielders causing havoc and finding the space for him to get into and then playing a beautiful ball to him. Let's put it one way. If we can find him as Sheffield United and get balls to him for him to get in a goal, you shouldn't have any issues with him. So I do understand why there is a buzz. I do think it is a bit discourteous to Doyle, though, because he's been brilliant as well.
Yeah. What about next season? Because I'm going to do that thing that opposition fans will hate me for. But I'm going to assume that you're going to come up this season. Is there a chance? Do you think that you might be able to keep hold of him for next season, or is it one of those where he himself? Do you think he'll have eyes on trying to break into City?
Well, if you look at Dean Henderson, he had eyes at breaking into Man U, and it never worked out for him because they had De Gea. Whether De Gea is good enough or not, he's on so much a week, isn't it? I think if you look at our McAtee players, who's he going to go get ahead of, especially in a more advanced role? Who's he going to come in and replace? So as another season-long loan, maybe we could have him. What I would say is, if he had any kind of interest in playing first team football, which I do think he does, I don't think he wants to be a bench warmer, he might look at another loan spell away just to hone his craft. And if he can do that in the Premier League, even better for him, surely.
Yeah, it is one of the things about him. Because, no, I mean, strangely, Maka, for City players, normally, when they go out on loan as youngsters, they don't tend to come back and make an impression on the first team. And it feels like Maka team might be different than this, doesn't it?
Yeah, I agree. I think he is a different one. It's interesting to hear that from Johnny about Doyle, though, because the bits I've seen of Doyle, I've been really, really impressed with him. Obviously, totally, totally different kind of player. But yeah, he's looked great. But you kind of feel that if Sheffield United wanted to buy Doyle, like you feel that'd be realistic, wouldn't you? Yeah, well, yeah. I think he would. I think that's more real. I think McAtee. I would imagine that Guardiola want to have a look at him next season.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
But and like I say, he's probably him in and Cole Palmer out on loan. That's the way I'd seen it. Similar kind of players.
We'll take him.
No, that could be the sweetener. Could be the sweetener, Johnny.
Alan, I realise that I'm sending all the questions your way about getting nervous, but I don't want to worry anybody. But it is Arsenal at home on the Wednesday after, and there's very much a feeling that, I mean, we're recording this ahead of Arsenal's game with Southampton, so I'm gonna take the bold choice of predicting an Arsenal win for that one, given Southampton.
Your neck out there.
Yeah, I'll put my neck on the line with that one.
Are you sure?
But it's probably going to mean that City have to win that midweek game. So how do you balance the squad for these next two games?
It's like you're aware of my generally anxious approach to things, David.
Yeah, I'm playing on it. That's exactly what I'm doing.
Obviously, Arsenal's very much in mind. I just think, you know, there's a lot at stake in the next week. We've done weeks like this before. They've gone terribly or they've gone very well. I think we do have, touch wood, the sort of depth in squad now that we can make the right changes at the right time. You know, I want to see on Saturday, I want to see Alvarez starting, I want to see Lewis starting. I think Cole Palmer should get some more time. But Wednesday is very much a big deal.
What do you make of Maka's point about Rodri, though? Would you put Phillips in? So, I mean, because he's barely played this season.
I wouldn't put Phillips in at a semi right now. He's like an unknown quantity still, isn't he, pretty much?
He didn't look particularly good against Leicester when he came on, let's put it that way.
No.
Yeah.
But yeah, also, just, you know, more pressure on Wednesday is it's actually my birthday on Thursday.
Oh,
so
God.
there's a lot riding on this if it goes wrong.
Yeah, definitely. Rest all your team. You're the Champions League and League, that's what's most important for you. You don't need an FA Cup. Come on now.
But yeah, I dare say the T word, but yeah, the T word is there, isn't it? So we Saturday.
We're in that stage of the season where every game is the biggest game of the season until the next one comes along, until you've lost, in which case it's no longer the biggest game of the season. Yeah, there we go. for Sheffield United, Johnny, other than obviously McAtee and Doyle won't be in the team, other than those two, who's been playing well at the moment for you?
Obviously, we've missed Jack O'Connell from the first season of the Premier League. He's a big reason we came down. He's long term. They keep telling us he's back on the grass, which I think is code for he's never going to kick a ball again. Surprisingly enough, an old Nottingham Forest left back, Jack Robinson, has come good in that position. And I know he's about 3'4", and if we're playing him up against Greta, it's going to be a bit of a mismatch. I think he's physically enough to. I'm not going to say mark him out again, that's just stupid. He's physically enough to leave an impression on some of your forwards. So that's going to be key and important. And you can't look past Sander Berger and Illiman and Dye. They have just been outstanding all season. Funnily enough, a lot of our players seem to have a bit of a love-hate relationship with Berger because he's got this, you know, slouched shoulder way of playing and he doesn't shoot from 84 yards every 10 seconds. And a few of our fans, like older generation fans, like, just hit it, Sander, hit it. Six players stood in front of him. Yeah, let's just chop it onto his ankles. But it really gets to me. But the way he runs forward, the way he gets forward, the way he plays the ball into space, the way he holds onto it until there is a clear-cut pass. Players like that, they are a rarity. You do get a lot of panicked players, I like to call them, which are, oh, I'm getting rid of the ball. I don't want any of this that's coming towards me. Like Calvin Phillips. And you see these you see these players once in a lifetime at clubs like ours, like Illiman and Dye, who's just got that magic. Look what he did against Tottenham. Goal out of nowhere after coming on, where nobody expected us to get anything. And while ever we've got them, we need to be making use of them. And these are the players that can knock it in off the rear end at 90th minute if we've held on to a 0-0. These are players that can give you those magic moments. So they'll probably both be injured for the semi-final.
Maka, just remind us how tall you are.
5'4".
5'4", there we
go. I've got a good 2 feet over it.
Can you play left wing back?
I can't actually, no. Just for standing on the left foot.
Do you need a wicket keeper though?
I'm over City.
I've had a riot here. It's been great, Johnny. I could talk to you all night. Let's have a score prediction for the game. We got the charity bet coming up a bit later on. What are you going to go for?
4-0 City. I'm going to be really optimistic and say we'll beat Burnley. Little caveat on Burnley. We beat them 5-4 on aggregate. So, you know, scoring five against Burnley's no special. We'll come out.
Lovely stuff. Johnny, I've had a riot. That's Johnny from the Sheffield United fan channel, the Shore and View. I best of luck for the rest of the season. You don't really need it. You're going to come up. I know you are.
I'm hesitant, but thanks, lads. We're going for a good time on Saturday. That's about all we can hope for today. But, you know, anything can happen and all that nonsense.
Lovely.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits, t-shirts that get it.
Get involved with the debate on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, before we get some other predictions, let's get a view from the Emirates. I've been speaking to Arsenal fan Michael Kashani about the mood there after their draws with West Ham and Liverpool.
A little despondent at the moment, I think. You've got to be bullish at the time of this. We've come too far to give up now. But there is this feeling now that this might just be that bridge too far. We might be running out that little bit and, a lot, depending on how the next few go, that it just might, you know, when we're up against a juggernaut like City, that it's just that bit too much to keep up with. But again, I admit, like, I did my maths wrong yesterday, so I didn't realise that it's still very firmly in our hands if we come away from the Etihad without losing.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's a very, very big ask, but that is making me feel a bit better at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of the point at West Ham, it doesn't... Weirdly, it's been talked about as this real big kind of missed opportunity and a big point for City, but it doesn't actually change that much from City's point of view. I think that the thing it might change, I guess, a little bit is... maybe the pressure on Arsenal's other games, because obviously you play Southampton before coming to the Etihad. So, like, is there more pressure on that game now? I know the bottom of the table and the kind of cut away and all that sort of stuff. But, like, weird things happen at this time of the season.
I mean, maybe. I've been thinking maybe it's because I think too sort of grand scale with these things. I would hope that, you know, Sam's at home Friday night, one of the only times in this title race we're actually going to play before City as well, which would be very, very nice. I've missed that. But I'd say Southampton isn't... well, it's going to be where the focus is, but it's not where the worry is. I'd say, obviously, there's City right after that. There's Chelsea at home after that. And I think the next game after that is Newcastle away. And, you know, that's Newcastle away, I think, is the one where people are really thinking, like, we'll know by then properly. But, you know, you'd hope that everyone's going into Southampton with a calm head because, you know, it's Southampton at home. You know, famous last words. But, yeah. If you screw up there, you don't deserve to win the title, so...
yeah, I get it. I mean, just reeling off those other fixtures. So Southampton at home, City away, Chelsea at home, Newcastle away, then Brighton at home. I mean, with City in the FA Cup this weekend as well, like City's game against City are going to have a game against Brighton as one of their games in hand on Arsenal. It's like, do you see this being one of those title races where both teams are going to pick up points relentlessly, or do you see both teams actually dropping points in this running?
It's really tough to say. I mean, so this is the discussion almost every day with my Arsenal mates, which is, where do we see City dropping points? And I think everyone's been a bit too sort of, you know, you'll only drop points in the games where it makes sense to drop points, which obviously, you know, having just come off a 2-2 draw with West Ham where we were 2-0 up after 10 minutes, you know, that weird things do happen, but, you know, fewer weird things happen when City are involved is the problem. I don't expect too many twists and turns, but I think that's also just because City have programmed it into me that you don't get twists and turns anymore. You just get a team that's going to win every week, and either you win every week as well, or you can be not a part of it.
Where do you see it in terms of, it's only the Premier League now for Arsenal. City obviously have the FA Cup this weekend. The Champions League as well is still on the horizon. Do you see it as kind of, there are distractions there for City where they might have to rotate and kind of rest players to get that little bit of leeway in other games, and Arsenal can just kind of go full pelt for the title now?
Well, that's the big hope, and especially because, I mean, given you've already got the West Ham game in hand, the Brighton game I think would have to be between match 37 and 38 for us in that midweek. Although I might be wrong about that. But yeah, like, obviously you've got a very, very quality, dense squad, but it's not the biggest squad. So a misplaced injury here and there could actually matter quite a lot. But, I mean, so from the Arsenal perspective, I mean, at least among the people I chat to, and we tend to have the same conversation quite a lot when it comes to these things. But it's just been that we all kind of hoped City would get through against Bayern because, you know, racking up the games might be where the points come in. Whereas if City are just focusing on the league at this point, I think we'd probably be finished.
Yeah.
But it's tough to know.
Yeah. In terms of the squad then at the moment, how's the squad coping with the pressure of the running?
I mean, at different levels, you know, I think the biggest problem at the moment is just injuries. And we've been lucky through most of the season, but we got two nasty ones against Sporting in the Europa League, which was Saliba, who's out indefinitely, with, you know, everyone's praying that he's back for the Etihad. Doesn't sound like he will be, but you never know how they're briefing with these things. And Tomiyasu, who's definitely out for the season. But that means those two injuries combined mean that we have to play Rob Holding against the Gabriel, and then Ben White still at right back. I like Holding as a player, and he seems like a good fella, but like, he's not of the required level, and it's really showing as well. And because he's so slow, we have to sit a lot deeper. He's not very technical. Gabriel is improving passing wise, but he's not the most technical. We didn't have Zinchenko, so we had three out of four defenders who aren't very good at passing the ball, frankly. And that was a huge, huge loss because, you know, West Ham's pressing was uncoordinated and rubbish, but they still managed to put us under a lot of pressure. So, you know, I think Zinchenko will be back. That'll be a big thing. But the squad seemed to be okay. I think it was complacency, which is not where I expected us to come down. But we'll see. I think we have to just see in terms of how they're managing the pressure. But it does seem much more tactical than mental at the moment in terms of why we're dropping off.
Yeah. Is Arteta doing anything differently, or is it just a case of kind of at this stage of the season, decisions kind of, there's a lot more weight given to decisions?
I think it's definitely that there's a lot more weight given to the calls he's making. He's having to make quite decisive ones. His subs are getting a bit weirder. I don't know if you had this with Guardiola, but obviously everyone talks about the galaxy brains with the Champions League, which is, to be fair to him, he's doing a lot less. But, I mean, his subs are a bit strange, but I can see the logic behind all of them is the thing. He's not doing something where you think, well, this is, you have lost your mind. But his subs have always needed a bit of work, and he's been getting better at them, but maybe that pressure is telling on him. Who knows? But he's not. I think with the injuries, and the fact that so much of our success this year has come from this stable base of seven to nine players who've been able to play almost every week. I don't think he's been inclined to change very much. And the big difference is this holding in for Saliba, with no option to move White or play Tomiyasu or anything like that. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he tries Zinchenko up right back next week with White in the middle, but. That would be tried at Southampton if it's tried at all, and then possibly never used again very swiftly.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, obviously it's difficult to look into the actual ins and outs of the game, given your Southampton game beforehand, but there is the real potential here for you to open up quite a huge points gap with City ahead of the game. Obviously, City would have the two games in hand, but it's kind of like it's the psychology of it all. And I'm not convinced that it actually matters that much because Guardiola's talking about knowing that they have to win every game, and Arteta's talking about knowing that they have to win every game. Does it matter though as a fan? If you can go into the Etihad game 7 points clear, having played two games more, do you maybe relax a little bit more? I don't know.
Maybe a little bit. I think now we've had this West Ham game. Like if we'd won yesterday, this would be a very different conversation, even if we'd scraped it. But now I think there's a feeling that we have room for maybe one slip up, and that's including the glory that would be a draw at the Etihad. I think in that sense, it's less about sort of the idea of like, oh, we can sit off, we can relax, or it's just the thing of having points on the board. And we had last year the situation with having a game in hand this entire time, and it being, and our chase, or I can't remember which way it fell now, but having a game in hand and thinking it's asterisk until this happens. And then you learn very quickly that games in hand are only so useful. Points on the board are what matters at the end. And if you can get those early, then great. If you can get those later, then great. But, you know, you'd rather have them early and then not have to think about it, because you then put more pressure on those extra games. I mean, so in the same situation, for example, if we were in City's position of having the two in hand, I'd be a lot more nervous than the fact that it's our chance to go and set the marker forward, assuming we don't lose at the Etihad, but making sure if we can that we don't lose at the Etihad.
Yeah, I know from my point of view, the game in hand against West Ham, I'm not that well. I wasn't that worried about until they took points off you. But then
don't be. They were absolutely awful. I have no idea how we let them back in.
But the other side of it is, the other one is Brighton away, and it's not a game that if they've still got a European chase and it goes into, like you say, in the final midweek of the season, then that could be a really, really tough watch. Will you relax at all on Wednesday night? Will you be able to enjoy it?
No, God. We have Southampton between now and then, at the time of recording at least, and it's the first thing I think about every morning. It is absolutely terrifying. I can't relax. It's all I'm thinking about. I would be surprised if he throws in anything particularly, you know, surprising. Like I say, so much of what has been good about this year has been that stable base of players. If you start mixing that up right now, then you take away the foundation that has been what we've relied on so much. So you never know, but I would be surprised. I think it would go for the same sort of 4-3-3, the same level of players. I mean, the only change that I would desperately want him to make, assuming Zinchenko's fit, which I think he should be, is some, like, just get Saliba fit one way or another, put him in a cryogenic suspension, do whatever it takes to get him fit. And even if we use him once and then he can't play for the rest of the season, if it's 90 minutes of the Etihad, he would make a world of difference to us. Yeah, like I said, I don't see him throwing in much of a surprise either way.
Yeah. Will you be, I mean, let's say the scores are level on 70 minutes or so. How would you be feeling, and what would you be hoping that that Arteta's approach is? Because as you said before, I think the draw at the Etihad is effectively a win for Arsenal in this title race.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. As you say, a draw is so much more valuable to us than it is to you. With that, you know, the problem that we've had with Arteta sometimes, particularly we had against Liverpool, was we have the right players, which is Holding coming on and being, you know, the big sponge for all the aerial balls in, and he's very good in a back three. But when we tried that against Liverpool, we brought in the new boy Kivior. That just invited more pressure, because you had this defense where you'd reshuffled everything. You took Gabriel out of the area he was doing really well in. So he's going to now be burnt by having invited too much pressure in a big game away. And I think we do best to keep trying to go at City, but without committing too many men forward, rather than trying to sit back and take the draw. But, you know, as you said, I would snap both your hands off for a draw. Yeah. Both of my own as well, if you want.
Everybody's hands. Just snap as many hands off as you want.
at this point, I give my legs, you know, whatever someone's offering, I will sell. But yeah, like as you say, like, it's so much more valuable for us to get a draw from that, and that will be in his head. But then that's where City will probably want us as well, knowing that they can just come wave after wave after wave after wave for that last 20 minutes. And I don't know if we can withstand that.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if anyone can, to be fair.
There's only one question left, Cash. I'm sorry to put your neck on the line like this, but we have the charity bet. We need a score prediction from you. What are you going to go for?
It's the flavour of our last two games, and I'm going to be optimistic, so I'll say 2-2.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
That was Michael Kashani. Maka, we be watching Arsenal's game with Southampton on Friday, hoping for the best?
I probably will, but I think it's one of those that it'll probably get turned off after about 20 minutes when they're about 2 or 3-0.
Yeah.
I don't hold much hope, but the way it is at the moment, it's in our hands. I know it's very corny, but that's all you can ask for.
Yeah,
and not to get very cocky, it rarely, when it's in our hands, have we cocked it up. So yeah, let's just see what happens.
Well, it'd be nice to nice first time for everything, isn't it? Nice to experience the other side of the coin. Let's regular listeners, we had Chris Higginbottom on last week, and when we were talking, we did a piece about the players for the opposition teams that we actually quite liked, and like never no connection to City, but you know you always liked them, and whether he meant it or not, Higgy said he'd always had a soft spot for West Ham. I asked him if it was about the Arsenal game, and I think he'd not clocked that Arsenal were playing West Ham that weekend. Obviously, the result came in. And then, this week, he just happens to have sent me this.
Just thought I'd mention, given that my recent bonhomie towards Bukayo Saka, the West Ham players, and all of the West Ham fans seems to have directly resulted in Saka missing a penalty and West Ham grabbing a point, I'd just like to extend my warm feelings towards Southampton and all of their players, particularly the absolute gunman that is James Ward-Prowse.
There you go. So if it comes off, Helen, we can thank Higgy for this.
Oh, yeah, thanks, Higgy.
I'm glad it's not only you that get those voice notes off him.
I was a bit disappointed because they're normally in verse. Yeah. So obviously, Helen, you mentioned before, birthday on Thursday, Arsenal game on Wednesday night. How are you coping with the nerves at this stage? Because like Maka says, it's in our hands. It's exactly what we'd want going into this stage. A few weeks ago, it wasn't in our hands. So here we are. You can't ask for more, can you?
No, I wrote it off quite a long time ago, to be honest. And yeah, everyone's saying to me, like, oh, no, Arsenal were going to run out of steam by Christmas. Then Christmas happened. And now it's end of April. And I was very much like, no, not going to happen. And then it's almost like, it sounds stupid, and I know it sounds incredibly entitled and spoiled, but almost like annoyed that now I'm like, yeah, right, it's in our hands. Come on, right. Okay, you know, it's like the all-consuming feeling again. And it's a lot because it's more than that, because the Champions League is going so well as well. It just feels like it means... you know, it's a big deal, and and because it's you know, Arsenal have not been in this position for a very long time, so it's I want to spoil a party.
Yeah, well, we heard from Kesh just how they are actually sweating on it at the moment, and it's strange because that, I mean, the game at weekend, Maka, didn't actually change that much in favour of City. City still have to win in midweek, otherwise it's in Arsenal's hands. It's just maybe put a little bit more pressure on Arsenal's other games, I guess. That might be the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't really, if it's a draw on Wednesday, I still won't be too disheartened, to be honest. I know that kind of does take it out of our hands, but no, it's going back to Saturday though. I mean, that could have been a disaster. I mean, that second half, I mean, they could have easily got something out of it, couldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Helen, in terms of City availability, we still wait on news on Nathan Ake, but the way he put his hand to the back of his leg against
Bayern, it did not look good last night.
I would suspect he might not be fit for this one. Given that we started the calendar year with zero left-backs and we've somehow lost two more left-backs in that time,
I beg to differ on that one, but we'll come to that.
Oh, we'll come to that. How do you shape up the defence? Is it simply a case of stick Walker in at right back, Akanji into the middle, and Laporte at left back, maybe?
Oh, yeah, you could. I think it's we've got a lot of, let's say, what is our defence at the moment? Who is a defender for Manchester City? What are we doing? Because you can slot a lot of players all over. I would. I think like Akanji can do it. You can pull Laporte in. There's a lot of options there. I'm not Akanji's biggest fan. I know he's taken a lot of flack, but I do think with time there is more confidence there. Mm. Ake looked distraught yesterday. It was horrible.
Yeah, it would be a minor miracle if he makes it for the Arsenal game, I suspect, Maka. In terms of the other options, though, I mean, Walker's barely played, Laporte's barely played, but they are quality players that you're getting to bring in. It might be a defensive crisis in inverted commas if there's a few injuries there, but that, you know, there's quality players to come in, isn't there?
Yeah, I think I've talked about this with my dad earlier, and I think the only real option left back's realistic. Is Laporte, isn't it?
Bernardo, could he do the Bernardo thing again?
No, we can't do that. No.
Against Saka?
No. Laporte.
What was wrong with that last time?
Yeah. So, no, Laporte left back, not ideal, but I think that's the best option. And then go with the rest that we've had, really. But no, although Ake was interviewed after the game and I was watching it, if your hamstring's gone, it's gone. I mean, you're out for 6 weeks minimum. But it wasn't one of them, I don't think. So you never know. You never know.
Yeah, we'll see.
I mean, look at Rashford. I mean, bloody hell, what was he supposed to be out for, ages? And then he's back. Just check the score, actually. Yeah, still 2-0.
Right, well, while we're on scores, we had a win on the charity bet with the 1-1 draw at Bayern Munich. Kieran Murray was the man with the correct prediction, and that takes us to...
Oh, it's 3-0, sorry.
Oh, Brilliant. It takes us to 170 for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group. William Hill is giving each of us a £10 correct score single. We'll start with the Sheffield United game. Johnny went for 4-0 to City, which is 17-2 and £85 if he's right. Maka, what are you having for this?
What was that?
3-1, mate.
I'm just distracted because David De Gea has come out of the goal. I'm just trying to control it and falling over. It's unbelievable.
Someone get that man a can of Monster.
Oh, pet rats have been keeping up all night. Oh, honestly. Right, so yeah, whatever. What did I say?
You said 3-1, and that's 10-1. Yeah.
So sorry, David.
Yeah, you're fine. It's the show's long off the rails. £100 if you're right. Helen, what are you having for this?
I'm being overly confident for me, and I'm going to go 5-1.
5-1. Yeah. If it comes in, though, 20-1 and £200, so fingers crossed. That takes us to the Arsenal game. We heard Keshi's prediction of 2-2. That's 16-1 and £160. Maka?
Sorry.
2-1, you said.
2-1. I did say 2-1. Correct.
15-2 and £75. Helen?
I'm going to go 3-2, and that includes an absolute Edison madness as well. It's incredibly stressful.
Why are you doing this to us? 3-2, though, it's 25-1 and £250 if you're right. And it's the title in City's own hands, more to the point. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and you can find more information about responsible gambling at begambleaware.org. And that brings us to the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you to my guests for this one. Helen Powell.
Thank you.
And Maka.
Thank you, David.
We've got a clip of this week's Patreon show coming up shortly. I'll be back next week for episode number 500 of the podcast. Don't miss it.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Do you know how many games Daniel van Buyten actually played for City?
I'm going to guess 3.
Not quite. He did appear a bit more than that.
That surprises me, actually.
6, yeah. And he was sent off in his last one.
But which, what a 6 games.
What a 6 games.
I mean, he's obviously a very good player. I think he probably has that kind of like King Kladzi paradox as well, where it's like, was he just a good player in a bad team? I even remember Kevin Keegan being asked about him while he was out injured and saying, like, are we going to sign him? And he was like, nah, I think he's going to go to a big club at the end of the season. It was like, oh, cheers, Kevin. That's nice here to say.
Yeah. So, Danny, he leaves City in 2004. Did you know what a Rolls-Royce of a defender and what a class act of a player you were getting at the time?
We're getting the best human being on earth at that time on board of the club. We were very aware of the sort of massive dude we were getting. 28 goals scored for Bayern in 239 games. That's more than Didi Hamann. My biggest memory was that during the Jürgen Klinsmann, the very brief Jürgen Klinsmann era in Bayern, we were out of strikers because of injury. What was his coup de grace? And he plays Van Buyten as a 9 for the last 10 minutes of a game against AC Milan and Milan. Guy scores a brace.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
You don't need to be ripped. You just need the right shirt. Epic Fits gives you a clean, confident silhouette. Snug on the arms, soft on the skin, generous where it counts. And with deals like $15 per tee, they won't break the bank. Visit epicfits.com today. Epic Fits. T-shirts that get it.